and welcome to another episode of Dez and Marco.
I'm Dez.
And I'm Marco. How are you doing, Dez?
Not bad. We've just been talking about it before going on air. I play tennis at a very mediocre level, and today my mediocrity paid off.
So you're saying you were slightly less mediocre?
I was less mediocre than my opponent.
Which, you know, if you're playing one person at a time, that earns you a win.
A win's a win, baby.
Yeah, still counts. I have no good segue. What are you drinking?
Oh, okay. This is actually interesting. Interesting because out of all the countries that we've drank beers from, this is a country which we should have reviewed but haven't. It's an Australian beer.
Australia.
And I mean proper Australian beer. Not like Foster's or, you know, which is kind of like not like Australian advertised, but brewed in Europe. This is like a craft Australian beer. It's from a brewery called Moondog Brewing, like Moondog Craft Brewery, set up in 2010 in Melbourne, the hipster capital of the world, or at least the Southern Hemisphere. And it's a Dez classic. It's called Splice of Heaven. Already a punny name, so you know it's good.
Yeah, of course.
Wait for the description. A pine lime ice cream IPA.
Oh, God. Yeah, I can see why you picked it.
Yeah, because it's Australian, of course.
Of course.
And how about you? What are you drinking?
So, no, first I have a question. So is Moondog the like the Australian cousin of Brewdog?
Oh, that's a very good question, Marco. And as you know, our research levels are bare minimum, so I have no idea.
So we're going to say yes. Yes, it is.
Okay, if you say so.
All right. So I've got a New England IPA. It's called the Juice Punch, and it's from the Frontal Brewing Company here in the Netherlands. I actually really like New England IPAs, and I don't think we've reviewed many.
A few, but not many. You're right.
Yeah. Like, we've got tons of IPAs. But anyway, never mind. Cheers.
Cheers.
Also, before going on air, I was telling you that I went cycling. I actually went cycling to a brewery. So, yeah, I've already had a few today.
Okay. Oh, talking about things that we have a few of. Our last show, which was, you know, our beginning of season 3, we didn't have much in the way of news just because by the time we actually recorded the episode, we didn't know how long it was going to take, etc., etc., etc. But contrary to our previous episode, we have a lot of news on this one. I'll start with a follow-on from last week, and you mentioned the Japanese moon rover from the iSpace company.
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember if it was about to land or should have landed by last week's episode.
Yeah, when we were recording, it was just meant to have landed, but there was no signal. So there were already like rumors that maybe they had lost the rover.
And I think those rumors are correct. Now, I did, again, the bare minimum amount of research before this episode. And the only news is that there is no news.
Bum, bum, bum.
The only mentions I have found is that they have lost contact with the rover literally minutes before it was meant to have landed. And I have seen one image which they have released, and it's a very nice image of Earth from the moon during a solar eclipse. So you've got this beautiful picture of the Earth.
Okay.
And then nothing. They're not saying what happened. They might not know. It might just be silence, but no contact with the rover as of yet.
Oh, okay. Stick around for episode 3 to find out what happens to the rover.
That could be like the theme of this season. It's episode 9999. There is still no contact with the rover.
Yeah, we'll do like a big reveal on episode 100.
Okay, sorry, that was stupid, and it may or may not get edited out, depending how creative I feel. Oh, another big thing of news, we both kind of reviewed Welcome to Wrexham, which was a surprise hit here on the Disney Plus channel, I think maybe on a different channel in the States.
Yeah, maybe Hulu or something like that, or FX, but go on.
Just as a recap, it's the true story of Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney as they sort of start this adventure buying a failing club in a random place in the north of Wales, but it's a town with a lot of history and a historic football club, which has hit hard times. They put a lot of money into it, and the first season followed, let's say, the maiden season following their ownership, they were a hair away from getting promoted. And it's a notoriously difficult league to get promoted from because only the top team is guaranteed promotion. And then it goes to a very brutal playoff. Anyway, season one finished at that playoff where Wrexham just missed out. This season, it couldn't have been scripted even if they wanted to. Like, reality crazier than fiction. I've been following Wrexham since being exposed to Welcome to Wrexham. It's not a spoiler because it's kind of been on all the news, but I'm so looking forward to season two because there was a literally to-the-end title race between Wrexham and Notts County. Rather than being rivals who kind of hate each other or are antagonists, the season has been, let's say, marked by great respect that these two clubs have had for each other. And it came to a showdown in like the, not penultimate, but three games from the end. It came to a showdown between these two clubs who had to play each other. And I don't want to give it away for someone who doesn't know what happened in that match, but it was nail-bitingly close. End of the season, Wrexham have been promoted.
Oh, wow. Cue the applause.
Yeah. It was actually really nice because at the final whistle, something which is customary in Europe is that there was a pitch invasion, but like the good type of pitch invasion. And Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds could be seen visibly crying. Just, you could sense the relief on their shoulders. It was just a release of emotion. And it was actually really nice to watch. It's so nice to see owners who care that much for their club. There has been some criticism because Wrexham are kind of like the oil barons of the minor leagues in the sense that people are saying they're putting a lot of money and Wrexham would not be where they are. But I don't think anyone can actually question their commitment to the club.
No, for sure. And season one, I guess the only season that's out now of the series itself, actually really shows that because it's Rob McElhenney that kind of convinces Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds barely knows what football or soccer is. And he clearly doesn't care at the beginning about the sport itself. And you can see throughout the season how they like end up really caring about the games and the matches. And Rob McElhenney wakes up at like 5 a.m. because he's in California to just watch the games with his son. Yeah, and I think it's really sweet. They're caught by the passion of the people of Wrexham and by the community that's there and end up really being happy about this basically business decision they made. Although you kind of mentioned it, I did see like a YouTube video the other day about Wrexham and, you know, they kind of bought a few players, kind of like who's the striker? Paul Mullins. And he was like the top scorer of the league above. And it's kind of like they have to get promoted. Like they're buying players that are one or two leagues above. So it's almost not fair. It's kind of like you said, like the Paris Saint-Germain or Manchester City's of the lower leagues.
A funny tweet story which happened after Wrexham's promotion is Welsh football legend Gareth Bale, who only retired, I think, last season or maybe the season before, but recently.
Yeah, in the summer.
Congratulated Wrexham. Rob McElhenney in particular was very keen to entice Gareth Bale out of retirement. They've already managed to convince a ex-England goalkeeper, Ben Foster, to come out of retirement to be the goalkeeper of Wrexham. But if they were able to pull back Gareth Bale for one season in the minor leagues, that would be such a crowd, I don't know, I don't even know what to say, like a crowd magnet. It would attract so many people to the stadium.
Yeah, it would be epic. It would really be epic.
Okay, moving on. Another thing which we kind of mentioned last season is Microsoft spent, I can't remember how much it was, but there was a massive acquisition of Activision Blizzard. Absolutely massive. And just recently, at time of recording, the purchase has been blocked by the UK courts. So in particular, the UK's Competition and Markets Authority, called the CMA, has blocked the deal between the merger or the acquisition of Microsoft purchasing Activision Blizzard. And not for the reasons that you might suspect. So we spoke about PlayStation spitting their kind of dummy out, claiming that Microsoft was going to restrict access to several big games such as Call of Duty as a monopolistic move to corner PlayStation out of the gaming market. But that wasn't the issue that the CMA had. their issue was with cloud gaming. And they said that this would put Microsoft into too powerful a position in the emerging slash budding cloud gaming market. The funny thing is, kind of predicting that this might have happened or people might have raised concerns about this, Microsoft had already pledged that its entire Xbox catalog was coming to competitive cloud services such as GeForce Now. And both GeForce Now, owned by NVIDIA, and Microsoft immediately complained against this outcome. Microsoft has said it's going to appeal the decision. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. It was the cloud gaming which killed the deal, not the fact that Microsoft would have been very big.
That's interesting. And that's also like one of the very rare cases of a government organization that is very forward-looking, because cloud gaming is not necessarily a thing yet, or it's not a mainstream thing. And there's already government organizations trying to regulate it. That's quite interesting.
Super interesting. I honestly don't know if it's the right or wrong decision. The only thing I can sort of tell you is that Microsoft are pissed.
But also, they're like, when they announced the acquisition, it was already ages ago, like months. It must be frustrating that after all this time, they're still, it's still not gone through.
I think we need to put like a massive asterisk, like neither of us are lawyers.
And thank God for that.
Reading very vaguely about this, but it needs to be approved in like every major market before it can go through. Yeah. So it needs to be approved in the US, it needs to be approved in Europe, and it needs to be approved in the UK, maybe even more markets, maybe even Japan, China, I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
Microsoft are super angry about this decision, and they've called it the darkest day of doing business in the UK. They've made very negative comments about Brexit, no matter what your feelings on that are. But they're kind of trying to, how do you say, convince the European Union not to make the same mistake and to say, for example, like, if you approve this deal, we'd rather move our headquarters into Europe sort of thing. And they're so angry at the UK.
But Microsoft's European headquarters are already in the EU. They're in Dublin. But whatever. Anyway, but like, speaking of video game company acquisitions, one came up kind of straight out of nowhere, which was Rovio. Do you remember them?
Yes.
They're like the ones who made Angry Birds.
Yes, that's the one. Yes.
Yeah, Angry Birds and the one about the pigs, and which was a spin-off of Angry Birds and the Angry Birds movie. Yeah, they've only done that, as far as I know. Again, zero research. So they got bought by Sega.
Okay. That's interesting. Like, why?
Wait till I tell you for how much. For 700 million euro.
Whoa, what a waste of money.
And I have a feeling that the people of Rovio said the same thing when the offer came in.
Oh, God.
And then immediately replied, sure.
That's a perfect segue into the main theme of this episode. And that's something which we can't really ignore. And it's something we wanted to talk about anyway, but it's just the timing is perfect. There's a new trend of Hollywood slash the movie industry to finally, after many, many years, decades even, to successfully convert gaming IP into film and television.
Yes. And to do that, we wanted to welcome you to our 6-hour audio essay on the Angry Birds movie. No, God, no. I haven't seen it and I don't intend to. Everyone I know has seen it, and we wanted to talk a little bit about The Last of Us.
Marco in particular has been waiting so impatiently for this because he is a huge fan of the series, and he's actually played the two games, even though the second one's actually really long, so it's kind of going to be like, I wanted to say three games. It's not a trilogy. There's two games, but the second game's a lot longer than the first, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
He has been hyped ever since the cast has been announced, and we knew Pedro Pascal was going to be playing the main character, and Pedro Pascal is currently on very much an upwards trend and has been in The Mandalorian, and he's been in a whole string of successful movies just recently. So we've seen the stills before that. We spoke about it last season, and we've been super keen to see how good a job was done by Neil Druckmann, who was famous from Chernobyl, which we spoke about, which was a fantastic miniseries.
No, Craig Mazin.
Oh, sorry, Nick Mazin. Sorry.
Craig Mazin.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah. Zero research, guys. Zero research.
But yes, Marco, please take over. What did you think of it?
So, Nick Mason was amazing. I especially liked his role. No, you said when the actors were announced last year, so Pedro Pascal was going to play Joel and Bella Ramsey was going to play Ellie, there was some skepticism, essentially around the fact that they didn't look exactly like the characters in the video game. I remember there was backlash on the choice of Pedro Pascal because his beard didn't look Joel-y enough. But, you know, people on the internet, they'll complain. And Bella Ramsey doesn't look exactly like the Ellie in the video game. But they are spot on. They're both incredibly good. I really like Pedro Pascal's voice. It's just so smooth. He could do a podcast and I would fall asleep to it. It's just like very soothing voice. But anyway, they are really, really good. They really capture the essence of the characters of the video games. And the series itself, I mean, I'm not going to spoil the story. You should watch it yourself. It's really good. Very compelling. I do not like zombie movies. Or zombie series. This is an exception. I loved how it really followed very closely the video game. And when it didn't, it was better than the video game. Like, the story was just more compelling and everything. And I was listening to, like, an interview from the showrunner. So, Neil Druckmann, the guy who developed the game itself, and Craig Mazin, who developed the TV series. And he's the guy from Chernobyl. And they were talking about sort of like the differences between a video game and a TV series. And in a video game, you need to have, even if it's story driven, you need to have pauses for actual gameplay. So in this case, it's the killing zombies and exploring the world and things like that. While in a TV series, you have more time to, because no one wants to see like someone just killing zombies all the time. You get more time to develop the characters. And that's why you get some really interesting episodes like the one with Bill and Ted.
I haven't played any of the game. And I was a bit concerned that maybe the whole infected / zombie genre might have been done to sickness. A few of, let's say, the stereotypes of those genres are there. But on the whole, this feels quite fresh. And I think one of the things that's done really well is that it's really respected the game. I've not heard anyone who's played the games complain about the TV adaptation. And on top of that, I've met people who have watched it that say, with no knowledge of the games at all, and they said it's really good. And one of the things that's been praised is the quality of the production. The fact that both, I suspect, in the game and in the TV series, you know, once the world has been set up, the way people behave is consistent / coherent to that universe. You know, it doesn't feel gimmicky or cheesy or stupid. It was kind of like, this has happened. This is their story in this universe. Another thing which I thought was really good is that, you know, people who haven't played the games or have watched it have said, you know, this is really good. I think it really pushes forward sort of the moral ambiguity of this, I don't even know how to describe it, like post-apocalyptic maybe, like setting.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Another thing, you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, is that a lot of people have said, as you said, if you remove the interactivity of a game, sometimes the story might be a bit weak, and reproducing that interactivity is difficult. Watching Joel just go around shooting zombies, or infected as they're called in this, might not be particularly entertaining. It kind of stuck on the core story points, and some people have said like it was like watching the cutscenes of the game, but that's not a criticism. It's kind of like, you know, they've kept the essence and made a good TV show out of what they had.
Yeah, but then on top of that, they made the cutscenes better because they added onto that world. We talked about it throughout the series, like while we were watching it, because you were asking me after every episode, like how close was it to the game? And I would kind of tell you, like, some parts were word for word copied from the game or taken from the game. And others, they just completely went in a different direction. But every time they went in a different direction, it was better. Like, the story itself got better. But, Des, you said something earlier that you said that you haven't played the game. How come? Because it's out on PC.
Okay, so, in the run-up to the release of the PC port of The Last of Us. Now, The Last of Us was first released, I think, in 2013.
Yeah, it could be.
So I think it was one of the last PS3 games was kind of on the PS4 as well. With the release of the PS5, I think The Last of Us Part 2 came out on the PS5, but they've done a remake it must be a remake of the first one with upgraded everything so that it's kind of better on the PS5.
Yeah.
So that's been out for a while on the PS5 and, you know, no complaints by anybody. It's been a worthy improvement on its predecessor, but the things that matter have been kept the same. And the TV series has come and has been hit with incredibly great reception. The game was delayed by 28 days and it was released, I think, on the 5th of April. I could be wrong, but anyway, it was released very recently. And I've been looking forward to play it now that it's available for PC. Okay, so there is that. As a side note, Sony has recently successfully ported a lot of its IP and PlayStation exclusives to the PC, and they've been met with both critical and public positivity. The biggest examples are the God of War series. Again, I've played that on the Steam Deck even, so something which is not that powerful, and it runs buttery smooth, is great. I played the Spider-Man game, which you raved about.
Yeah, it was good.
That works on the Steam Deck fantastically well. I've also got a gaming PC, and obviously that's more powerful, and it works great on those two systems as well. So I had high hopes for this. Like, it's been, you know, it's not a new game. It's already been out for a while. They're porting it straight after the TV show, obviously trying to coincide the timings to maximal commercial effect. I was so keen to play it. I installed it, and it was a horrible, horrible experience.
Go on.
So, I'm not a coder. I'm not a programmer. I don't know the difficulties which are, let's say, in this process.
But please, Des, tell a programmer and a coder how they should be doing their job.
Okay, I don't know how these things work, but I have never played a game, including like the Spider-Man and the God of War ones, which are, again, PlayStation exclusives, which have been ported to PC. Like, apart from the fact it's a big download, fine, I don't care. But to start the game, I'm not joking, even if you had like a high-end PC, people were waiting upwards of an hour just for like the shaders to pre-compile.
Oh my God, okay.
Because it took so long to even start the game, and may I add that while these shaders are pre-compiling, you can't do anything. Like, you have to keep it on the menu page for an hour.
Oh, like on the main menu?
Yeah, you have to wait there for an hour. You can't even quit the game and let it do it in the background. No, you have to start the game and wait.
Oh, no. Okay. Wow.
The game, it ran like a choppy mess. It was horrible. Buggy. Crashes everywhere. I swear to God, I must have restarted it 15 times just to do like the 5-minute intro. I was like, no, I'm not playing this. I quickly went online to see if other people were having the same issue. Literally everyone. It's not even been review bombed because it's just a crappy port. It was absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
The reason becomes apparent when you dig deeper. The biggest reason was they used a company which is notorious for making terrible ports. So the company in question is called Iron Giant.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember a while ago. Do you remember, you know, the Batman Arkham series?
Oh, is it them?
Yeah. So it's the ones who completely fluffed the Arkham Knight release, which led to a policy change on Steam even, where, because usually they never gave refunds or like, you know, there was a 2-hour window, but Warner Brothers actually took the game off the market because it was so bad. Steam has said that whoever wants a refund on it, no matter how much they've played, they would have done it. Steam have done the same for this release of The Last of Us. They said, if you've bought it, even if you've played more than 2 hours, because we appreciate it took people 2 hours just to pre-compile the shaders, you can get a full refund. They've taken away the time limit of playing the game for a full refund.
Okay, wow.
Okay, the plot thickens because the other ports, which were incredibly successful, they were made by a company which Sony has bought. So Sony bought this company called Nixes, and they are specialists in porting games to PC. So before they got acquired, they had ported the Deus Ex series to PC, the Tomb Raider series. And then ever since their acquisition, they've successfully ported the Horizon Zero Dawn series and the Spider-Man games. all of which have been met with fantastic reviews and appraisal or whatever. So no one knows why did they give one of their biggest IPs to a crappy outsourced company when they had like one of the best companies in the business under their umbrella.
Yeah, that is weird.
Super weird. Oh. And embarrassing for Naughty Dog as well, who have come up with so many patches and they've come up with so many apologies and they said that they will fix this no matter what. But like, I'm just so annoyed. Like, I'm going to wait for everything to be polished and then give it another go.
Yeah, but you know, in the meantime, you lose the momentum of, because like, I bet you would want to play it now because you just saw the series and you're hyped about it. Maybe a year from now, it's not going to be the same. But yeah, what a missed opportunity.
Which is a perfect segue into our next story. Guess what? Who didn't miss their opportunity?
Wow. Okay. I mean, I know because I have the script in front of me. But yeah. So another very successful video game adaptation came out recently. It's in cinemas and it's the Super Mario Brothers movie. And you've gone to see it, Des.
I have gone to see it, and so have a boatload of other people. So even before reviewing the movie, at time of recording, it still hasn't been released in Japan, but it's just about to. And it has made over $1 billion worldwide.
Wow. What's the most successful movie ever? Is it like one of the Avatars? And
that's a difficult question. So in terms of real numbers, I think it's like the Avatar Way of the Water. But in terms of tickets sold, it's something stupid like Gone with the Wind or something like that. So it's difficult to judge.
Okay. No, but like, okay, you've gone to see it. And to be honest, so from my point of view, so I've seen a couple of reviews and they're kind of mixed. Like the movie itself is okay. Also, contrary to The Last of Us, there really isn't an underlying story which is worth telling, I think. Like the video game is just you jump around and then you save a princess, which is, you know, pretty much the same plot in every game ever since like the 86, I think the first one came out. But anyway, so like I've seen mixed reviews, and what do you think? What did you think of it?
My honest opinion, and this is like my personal opinion, that it is the best worst movie I've ever seen.
Okay, how so?
Because the story is terrible. It's flimsy. The characters aren't really constructed with any depth. Had it been in any other setting, it would have been an absolute, like, what the hell kind of movie. But it's not any kind of setting. It's Super Mario Brothers. Visually, it is stunning. It looks exactly how you would imagine a Mario movie to look. The characters look, you know, fantastic. The CGI is great. The animation is great. The movements look exactly like playing a Mario game. It looks perfect. So from that point of view, already you've got a smile on your face because you're seeing these characters which most people will have been brought up with.
Yeah.
Anyone who's like a kid nowadays to like maybe even before the millennials, like millennials down, and maybe even was it Gen X down? People who have grown up with Mario will recognize all the locations and they'll recognize all the characters. So just from that, you'll have a smile on your face. The movie does a lot of fan service. It's full of Easter eggs, and they're not forced Easter eggs in the sense that they're kind of there in the background. So everybody will pick up on something different. And it does that thing of like, oh, I remember that. And so it hits those nostalgia buttons and it's got tons of them. You know, everyone will pick up something. It visits locations that from the Nintendo universe, like the Mario universe. So it's not just pipes underground. You know, it's the Mushroom Kingdom. It's Rainbow Road. It's Donkey Kong Island. It's Bowser's Castle. It's all these locations that you've heard of brought to life. Accurately. And just like in the games, no one knows where Mario came from. He just appears from a tube.
He just is.
He just is. And here they try to make a little bit of an introduction. You don't care. And I think that's something which the reviewers kind of like, oh, well, you know, the character wasn't built up. But Mario doesn't need any character building. He's, you know, he's Mario. Everyone knows who Mario is. And he just is.
Well, maybe that's, you know, I think it goes in a little bit in contrast to how movies and TV series are these days, where everything kind of goes dark, and like even the Batmans, they always like, he's always more and more dark and things like that, and everybody needs a backstory and everything. So maybe, you know, just going back to something simpler and like colorful and fun, maybe is a nice change in tone. One thing that I read was that there was that basically this movie kind of reminded of the Lego movie, where it's just this crazy world where everything is kind of funny and there's this like joke after joke after joke. Is that the case?
Yeah, it's almost an overload on the senses. So yeah, I think that's quite an apt comparison.
Okay. The Lego movie was awesome. I really liked it. It was just so funny.
So the Lego movie, I think, was maybe a little bit more adult with its humor.
Okay.
I think it's very much in the same boat.
Okay. Well, then I might go see it. You know, the only thing is, because this is essentially for kids, I've seen trailers of it here in the Netherlands, and they're all in Dutch. And the thing is, like, movies in the cinema are always in English, except for children's movies, which are in Dutch. So I'm really worried that if I go to the cinema and like book a ticket or whatever, or buy a ticket, then the movie will be in Dutch. And I really don't speak Dutch. So that might be an issue.
This opens up the debate. We started off the episode, or at least the main segment of this episode, talking about how the film and television industry is now maybe finally grasping how to successfully convert gaming intellectual property into successful adaptations.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo, even in the early 90s, they made the movie is now infamous, the first Super Mario Brothers movie, which I think Nintendo were hoping people would forget.
Sadly, no.
No, we haven't. It was terrible then, it's terrible now, and it's almost got a cult following because it's so bad. Like, no one, even the cult people, will say it's good. It's just so bad that it's kind of remembered for that reason. And it burned Nintendo. Like, they were put off the movie industry and they were so scared of taking risks for maybe over 30 years now.
Yeah.
Now that they've been so successful with this, from what I understand, I think the movie cost maybe $200 million to make. Nintendo put forward $100 million and Universal put up the other $100 million. And the deal was that once Universal recouped its money, the profits would be split 50-50.
Okay, wow.
So it's made over $1 billion as it is, and it's still to be released in Japan, which you can suspect is going to be a massive cash cow for them.
Yeah.
You know, the Marvel movies are not doing so well. This has been more successful than any Disney animated movie ever, beating Frozen 2, which was the record holder for most successful animated movie. Is the future more of this? Can we expect a Zelda movie? Can we expect spin-offs of the Mario movie? Can we expect a Metroid movie maybe, or TV adaptation? Or heck, can we expect other intellectual property from other successful gaming things, such as, like, I don't know, Half-Life? Or, I don't know, you name it. Portal would have been a great one. We've already seen successful things like, you know, The Witcher Season 1 on TV. The Sonic movies have both been very successful. We've mentioned The Last of Us. Maybe we could mention the Halo series, which I think is mixed reviews, but the gamers hate it. So I don't know if I should maybe include that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just saw the first episode, I think. It was fine. I mean, it was nothing great, but anyway. Yeah, perhaps we have crossed that barrier, and now video game adaptations are pretty good. I mean, we spoke today about two very good examples, like one because the story itself is very good and another because it's just fun. So they're successful in two very different ways. But then also, I think it has something to do with the fact that video games are becoming more like movies. So there's more cutscenes, there's more depth. Go back to the dawn of video games and like Pong had no plot. Or what is it called? Like Asteroids or whatever, like the one with the alien, or Pac-Man. It just does. There was nothing. But now, because they're so elaborate and so there's so much work that goes into them, they're proper stories. So an adaptation isn't necessarily a difficult thing to do nowadays. I don't know. Like, I remember last week or last episode, I talked about Mass Effect. Mass Effect could easily, in my opinion, become a really good TV series because there's so much content and there's such a giant universe behind it, it wouldn't be that difficult to adapt it to like TV. Or another one that I really enjoyed, not necessarily because of the gameplay, but because of how good the story is the Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
There's so much material out there that Hollywood can kind of easily pick and adapt, especially if it's something, for example, Last of Us. I think the good thing about it is that they had Neil Druckmann there to create the series with them and kind of evolve it and decide what to like, what to keep the same as the game and what to change. You can tell that it's his baby and like he wanted to do it right, and he did, rather than just getting the rights and then, you know, let's just do something with it and see how it goes. Like, if it's done right and if there's a good story behind it, I think it's going to be successful.
So, yeah, I think we are in agreement that maybe the market has matured and the time is now. Considering that video games have an inbuilt audience, as long as you don't mess it up completely, that could make things more, let's say, appetizing for investors to actually produce these movies, because the industry has changed. You know, there's less money in the cinema. People have been talking about the demise of movie theaters now for a while. And maybe going, let's say, in a safe direction where you've got an inbuilt audience already. And let's be honest, the whole remake stuff and reboot is kind of getting a little bit stale, and you can only reboot movies so many times.
Yeah.
You know, they've done the comic book adaptations. Maybe this is the next thing.
Yeah, could be. And now the base material is good enough to adapt to a movie or a series. So I think we all gain from this. Like, we get better series and we get series or movies from our favorite games. So win-win.
Talking about win-wins, Marco, how was your beer?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about tennis again. my beer was all right. Apparently, it won the gold medal of Dutch Beer Challenge in 2022 for New England IPAs. It's fine. I'm not blown away by it. So again, it's called the Juice Punch from the Frontal Brewing Company here in the Netherlands. It's a New England IPA. They advertise it as summer in a can. It's very hoppy and a little bit fruity. So it's good, but I don't know. I wouldn't pick this one first. So I'm going to go with 3.5 out of 6.
Okay, well, it's not too bad, you know.
No, it's fine. Like, it's just, I don't know, doesn't stand out in my opinion. But anyway, what about yours? Your punny Australian cousin of Brewdog beer. What's it like?
So again, it's from the Moondog Craft Brewery from Australia. It's called Splice of Heaven. And it's really funny that yours won so many awards, because this one hasn't won any.
However,
I can see why it hasn't won any. So they have actually added vanilla into the ingredients, and I don't taste any lime. And to be honest with you, the vanilla isn't as strong as I would expect from a beer which describes itself as a pine lime ice cream IPA. So it's more of an IPA with like an undertone of vanilla. So it's not as hideous as you would expect, which means it's just less hideous than you would expect.
But still hideous.
But still, yeah, on that side of the spectrum. So definitely give it maybe a 2.5 out of a six pack. I'm sorry, my Australian cousins, but no, 2.6.
And that is the end of us reviewing Australian beers. 2.6.
Sorry, 2.5 out of a six pack.
Okay. I didn't know we ever went into such detail in anything.
Okay. All right. On that note, an average beer, a less than average beer, a lot of news where we spoke about Wrexham getting promoted, some of the news coming out of the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard, which has been blocked by the UK courts, and the shock news that Rovio is being bought out by Sega for a ridiculous amount of waste of money. This led us onto the current trend of successfully adapting video game content for TV and movies. We've been looking forward to The Last of Us. The first season has completed to both critical and public great reviews and great reception. We've also spoken about the surprise hit the Super Mario Brothers movie, which finally appears to have pushed the right buttons with the audience and has made Nintendo a boatload of money. This looks like it's a trend which is going to stay, and we've given our opinion on the matter. We suspect there'll be more of this to come in the future. So, as usual, Marco, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Likewise. And to our audience, thank you so much for listening. Talk to you next time.
See you next time, guys.
Bum, bum, bum.